Okay, well, we're picking up where we left off, I presume. Our next subject here is contempt. All right, we have on the website a case where we had to find the judge in contempt of court. Oh, you had a question, though, you wanted to start off with.
My question is, in terms of processing a lawsuit under common law and processing a lawsuit under regular civil, is a common law lawsuit much speedier in terms of getting it resolved and getting to the judgment part?
It should be. It should be. But you will find that for practical reasons, you might delay it. You know, there are... One of the problems that we have is ignorance on the part of the other side, and they do things, and we have to kind of be perfect, and so it takes longer. Come on across. It takes longer to be perfect. You know, you don't. In one sense, you don't have to be so perfect because you're in your sovereign capacity and you can fix problems, but there are some certain concepts you have to respect. For example, what is a court? Okay, now the legal definition of a court is it's the person in suit of the sovereign. Okay, and if you talk to an attorney, he'll tell you, well, it's a forum where you go to resolve a controversy. Okay, but that's not what a court is at all. Okay, the legal definition, yeah, that's correct, that it's a person in suit of the sovereign. But what a court really is exemplified by a little story I'll tell you. There was this king sitting on his, fictitious story, by the way, but this king is sitting on his throne and he looks out the window and he sees some knave stealing oranges off his orange tree. So he sends the guard out, you know, they pick him up and they throw him in the dungeon. And so on dungeon visiting day, the prisoner's brother goes visiting, and the prisoner is crying about how he was mistreated and it was unfair and he really didn't do it and he didn't have a chance and so on and so on. So this really upsets his brother, the visiting brother. So his brother says, don't worry, bro. He says, I'll see what I can do for you. And that night, the brother who happened to be the chief cook poisons the king. Okay, and that takes care of the problem. Well, that's one scenario. Okay, now another scenario, you got the same thing. The knave is caught taking oranges off the orange tree. What happens, he's brought in before the king. The king says, well, you know, we gotta have a trial here. Okay, they make the accusations, they provide counsel to them, and they have this big trial. Everybody comes out to see the trial, including the prisoner's brother. And so he ends up convicted and he goes to the dungeon, same term, okay? Now on dungeon visiting day, the brother goes to visit and he gets the same sob story. But the difference is he says, look, bro, he says, I was at the trial. I saw the evidence presented. You had a fair chance to present yourself, your case. And I'm sorry, you know, but you went looking for trouble and you found it. Okay? And guess what? The king lives another day. Okay? So what a court really is it's a stage upon which the king puts a show to convince the world that he's right in throwing this guy in the dungeon. That's what a court really is. And that's probably the highest principle of what a court is. So when I conduct my proceedings, I try to conduct them in such a way I'm aware of the world out there. There's the judge, the cops, the marshals, the clerks, the recorders, plus general public, the newspapers if the case is big enough, and so on. And I try to be friendly with everybody and create this impression of that I'm really on the right side of the fence. And so what this does is this allows me, the sovereign, to live another day. Okay? And this is really the most important principle. When you put on a good show, even if they're out to get you, it takes some steam out of their efforts. I've noticed that, and I've seen judges do instant turnarounds. You know, one day they're like tigers on the bench, and the next day they're lambs. And why? Well, probably they consulted with somebody, and instead of saying, how can we get this guy, they're probably saying, what am I doing wrong? And his cohort saying, well, you know, whatever, they discuss it. But they don't have that hate energy to motivate them to really do a number on you. And so that's really the principle. And there, just as another principle, another story to kind of add to that. In Thailand, I think it was, there was a lot of political upheaval, and the standard method for solving problems was just to have somebody just disappear at midnight. Okay? That was the country was well known for handling political dissidents that way. Well, there was this one person who happened to be the head of the Buddhists. And what they were doing back in the 70s is they were simply, a Buddhist would go out, sit in the middle of the street, pour kerosene on himself and set himself on fire. And then he would die. And this would create tremendous international concern. It created all sorts of problems for the government. And what people couldn't understand is why it was the head Buddhist who was behind this didn't disappear at midnight or somehow get attacked and so forth. Well, nobody really understood the reason why, but they did notice one thing in the articles that I was reading, and that was there was something about this guy. Everybody loved him. He was head of the Buddhists, so he went to important functions and was invited to high-level parties and this sort of thing. And everybody just loved him. They didn't want to kill him. You know, he's causing all these problems for them, but they loved him. And so they speculate that it was that popularity that kept him out of the way of this grinding machine, you know, this political machine. And I've seen it work. And one of the best examples I have of it working for us was there was this woman who was following these techniques, and she wanted to file a certain paper. And they wouldn't file it, so she generated an order ordering the clerk she did a writ of mandamus, ordering the clerk to allow the paper to be filed. And the clerk wouldn't do it. And she went down, it was a Friday morning, she went to the clerk, and for that morning, right up to midday, she's arguing with the clerk in a friendly way, however. I mean, she was watching her protocols and politics. But she was arguing with the clerk that she's got to file it, that this is proper authority, this is a court and all this. And the clerk was simply saying, no, that's not what happened. You can't order me. You've got to go to the appellate court. And when the appellate court issues the order telling us to file, then we will do it. So anyway, midday, she got discouraged. Finally, you know, and she went home. Well, Saturday morning, she got a letter in the mail from the clerk. And this letter invited her to come down and file the paper. Well, what had happened, we found out later, that the clerk had researched the problem. She actually took the time to research it and found out that there was section 1315 of Title 28. I think that's the 1315 or 1360. I don't know. Somewhere in there. Anyway, and what it said, and get this, it said that the United States District Court had the authority to order a member of the staff to perform a duty owed to the plaintiff. Now, isn't that interesting? It didn't have the authority to order a defendant to do a duty owed to the, okay? Well, we had theorized a lot about there was this kind of bias in the system, but this was the first actual visible black and white that we found. Well, why is it that the district court had this authority and you did not have to go to the appellate court. And it was only for the plaintiff. Well, the reason is because the plaintiff owns the court. That's the sovereign of the court. Right there in the codes. And so that really helped us. We use that in a lot of cases after that, okay? So, well, it's on our record now. You got it on the DVD.
Yeah. The codes of that?
Well, I think it was. I thought it was 1315 or 13 something or other. It's in. It's in the United States District. It's in the Title 28. Yeah, and it's a, it has to do with a duty that's owed to the plaintiff and mandamus. So it's the district court, the trial court level, can order the clerk to do something for the plaintiff only. The defendant has to go to the appellate court and get the appellate court to order the district court to do a duty to owed to the defendant. So there's a very significant bias. But the reason is because the sovereign of the court, that's his court, that's his personnel, and the defendant is an outsider to the castle. And so the defendant has to go to higher up in the structure as it's defined in, under statutory law. Okay? So that was a real revelation to us, and that was help, and that was a direct result of being friendly. Okay? So you always want to be friendly. In another case, this woman was up in the LA court system, and she hunted all day long. She went there in the morning all the way to evening, trying to find where her case disappeared to. Eventually, right toward the end of the day, she found out that it was on the judge's desk. He had taken it unlawfully and was looking at it or whatever, but he should have left a checkout card saying he had it. So she, at the end of the day, she was walking through the hallway and she passed a group of clerks. And one of the clerks stepped out from that group, came over, intercepted her, and asked her if she was Mrs. So-and-so. And she said, yes. She says, I just want you to know how much we appreciate what you're doing. And then she went back to the clerks group. Now, one thing that I have found out is some of these judges who are so nasty toward you, they're also nasty to their own personnel. And although the personnel conduct themselves to get along, it doesn't mean they like them. And they will do little favors. And we've had people have extra little favors. As long as their jobs are not at risk, you'd be surprised what they will assist you with if they know that you won't somehow react to get them in trouble. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of being nice... Mm-hmm. Can you tell everybody the joke about what to tell the clerk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I meet with the clerks, our systems here in Orange County and Los Angeles are so large, it's hard to get the same clerk all the time. But I try to be friendly with them, and on first contact, I have a standard little joke I tell them, which they all love. And I tell them about... I just ask him, I say, did you hear about this guy that was in court the other day that was really fighting his parking ticket? He was making a federal case out of it, practically. And they say, well, no. I said, yeah. He says he put up such an argument that the judge got disgusted with him and asked him. The judge said, sir, he says, didn't you see the sign? And the man said, well, yeah, Your Honor, I saw the sign. It said fine for parking. Yeah, they love it. As you know, it's a cute joke, but it really is an icebreaker. And so you're there, you're not, you know, they meet sour faces all the time. And if you come in there friendly and like, look, this is just business, all right? And when you're outside, you treat the enemy like they're your friend. That doesn't mean you put your guard down, you know, but you treat them like a friend. You remember I told you about the service, what happened with the guy going down to Security First National Bank, right, and getting the helicopter ride. Well, see, when you get on that level, it's kind of a standard protocol among leaders that they always treat each other well. You know, they may be, their soldiers are out there battling, but they treat each other well, all right? And, in fact, I remember at the end, or was it, it was during World War II, there was we were doing battle, and our side won, and we captured one of their high-level generals on the other side. And our general put him in the brig. And that totally shocked the guys. You don't put generals in the brig, you know. It's like you have this club here, and when you're together, you're friends, you know. And the American general was a totally different mindset. He was more Americanized. You know, we have this equality thing, and we don't give special privileges. And it totally shocked the other side because, you know, you don't do that. So, and if there was a story also about during the Civil War, this sergeant was keeping a diary, and he was shocked. He was on the English side, and he was shocked that the Americans were actually shooting at the officers. Okay? Well, we were hiding behind the trees, you know, guerrilla style. But that we have a different mindset on that. But internationally, and in our very high levels, the presidential level and up there, yes, these guys have a lot of protocol, a lot of respect for each other, even though they're on opposite sides. Yes.
Actually, during the Battle of Waterloo, one of the artillerymen of Napoleon said he saw the other guy on the horse, the general on the other side, and he was in his range and he could shoot, and Napoleon didn't allow the shooting. He said that the generals are not killing each other, it's just the soldiers.
That's right. Sure. Sure. So that's it. And that is why when my friend went up to see that chairman of the board, you know, you're talking about high-level political people now. That's a political position, really, in addition to an ownership position. And so he got the courtesy, but because my friend was also very diplomatic, it worked out very well. You know, you would have thought, geez, they were buddies to do that. No, they weren't buddies, but that's how you treat people on the high level. And it works on the lower levels, too. You know, people who don't know this go in, they're growling at the, you know, a clerk has nothing to do with it, and yet they throw their emotions at them. There's no emotion in this business, you know. So anyway, that's that little point. Well, now here in this case, I guess I've answered all the questions up to this point on that. All right. Well, in this case here, we have this is actually the case log, so it's a lot of stuff there that I've included with it. But if we go further down, you'll see we have right here. It starts on. On June 9th, 1999, the supervising clerk filed a certificate and order vacating documents. What had happened was that there was some contention about filing the First Amended Action. And when this guy filed the First Amended Action, the judge communicated with the clerk, or the clerk communicated with the judge, and the judge told the clerk to go ahead and put in a motion requesting that the First Amended Action be rejected. So the clerk followed the judge's instructions, and then the judge received it and authorized it. Okay? Well, that's highly improper protocol. And so, and we had given an order to the judge once before, making it clear that he had no business issuing orders. So when that happened, we then said, well, okay, there's a certificate and order vacating documents. And I'll click on that. And so there it is. Okay. And so the part that's in green is, the green lettering denotes information entered on a pre-printed form. So that's new data entered. The black is the pre-printed part. And so that the First Amended Action of Trespass and Trespass on the Case, which was filed on demand, was filed in the above entitled action on June 7th, that the documents were filed in error as the court directed. There you are. There's the admission. The court directed. And there, that means the judge, okay? Directed said clerk to reject the above document as there is no leave of court or stipulation from the other parties to file a First Amended complaint. And it wasn't a complaint, it was a First Amended action, okay? It was common law, not civil law. Okay, wherefore the said clerk petitions this court. See, because of the first part, the clerk is now petitioning the court for an order to vacate it. All right? That's kind of the wrong sequence. So then the order comes along, pursuant to the certificate of the clerk, and good cause appearing. And by the way, the phrase good cause means a legal reason. It does not mean, oh, we think we should do it. Okay? And it is hereby ordered that the First Amended action of trespass and trespass on the case is hereby vacated. And, of course, there was an illegible signature. But when we went into one of the hearings, we got an admission from the judge that he had signed it. Okay? By the way, in the hearing where the judge was the subject, he was sitting on the bench at the time we were holding trial on him. Okay? You don't care where he sits.
Yes. What is the legal reason? Good cause apparent.
He didn't have one.
Repeat the question.
He says, what is the legal reason for throwing it back out? There wasn't one.
No, I mean, you said good cause appearing is illegal.
Yeah. Whenever you see the phrase good cause, those two words, that means it's backed by some code or legal reason that authorizes whatever is going to be done.
Well,
so,
when you get the mic, the question is this. I guess my question is, when they put that in the order, they don't have to say what the good cause is. It's just could be anything.
Well, the judges, everybody pretty much accepts that when the judge issues an order, it's to be obeyed. Okay,
right.
So they get kind of sloppy about explaining themselves. Plus, the rules actually say that he doesn't have to explain himself if you fail to ask him to before he issues the order. So you have to, if you want him to explain his order, you got to tell him you want the findings of fact and conclusions of law before he issues it.
Where's that part in the process?
In the rules of court.
Rules of court.
I believe that's where it is.
I guess it was backwards, because when the judge gave me an order to stay away so many yards from the street, mm-hmm. I then came back with a motion for findings of facts and conclusions.
Yeah, but you were too late. He's not obligated to give it because he'd already issued the order.
So how would you do that when you're actually
You do it before he issues the order.
Yeah. You're standing in front of him.
So basically, or before. Object, basically.
Yeah, well, you demand it. It's not an objection. It's a demand if he's going to make an order. But on the other hand, why not do a counterclaim and now he can't make any orders at all?
Right.
You know? You got to keep this thing clean. You got to throw your punches. You don't just stand around waiting for these guys to do things. Not in that situation. Get him off the bench.
And one more question. Mm-hmm. This is what confused me when I kept reading this on your site, is that where it says, wherefore the said clerk petitions this court that an order be made.
Sure.
Vacating. And then down there it says, so my question is, when they made the allegations that the court told her to vacate,
yeah,
what's the difference between that court and your court, if you keep saying the court? Is there a difference?
Well, in that court, the tribunal is the judge himself, because he has that authority as the chancellor in an equity court.
Right.
But in a common law court, the judge, the court of record, the judge has absolutely no authority to make any decisions whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah, they're trying to get all of the power centralized into that judge. Okay, because he can be controlled, whereas they can't really control a jury unless they filter the evidence they get. All right?
Which they do.
Which they do, right, in a lot of ways. So, anyway, that was the issue right there. So now there's a process you go through for contempt. There's two kinds of contempt. There's direct contempt and indirect contempt. The indirect contempt happens outside the vision of the court. Direct contempt, the court's in session and it happens right in front of them. Now, since you're the sovereign, your court is wherever you are. Okay? So, like, for instance, this one person did a counterclaim, and he was brought into a criminal court because he was in custody, but his court went with him. And so when they did something contrary to one of his orders, that was a direct contempt. Now, the beautiful part about a direct contempt is that you don't need a trial. All you do is you find him in contempt of court, because nothing needs to be proven to the court, because the court saw it. Right? The person in the suit of the sovereign. They saw it. So no trial's needed. So therefore, you have a direct contempt and you go right to it. However, when you do a direct contempt, you have to write up why you found it in contempt. So the court now tells a story to show the rest of the world why the sovereign decision was correct. Okay? You still have that overriding image factor. So anyway, there's a procedure you go through on contempt. And since this was an indirect contempt, you have to have an accusation and you have to have a trial. So the accusation is very simple for contempts. All you have to do is file an affidavit. Okay? Give an affidavit to the court. The court can take it from there. We did one more step. We issued a notice of a motion for contempt, and we did the actual motion for contempt. So we're forcing the issue. We're making the court move. Now, the court could have, on its own motion, moved for a trial and so forth. See, there's three parties here, and the court is one of them. But the court generally does not move unless there's really some justification. Okay? Maybe urgency or something. Yeah, you got a question?
What's the difference between a notice of motion for contempt and the actual motion for contempt?
Well, in the notice, I'm saying, hey, did you know we're going to make a motion?
Okay?
And then in the motion, we say, I want the court to do such and such. That's the difference between the two.
Is it true? Because I've heard that in some courts, they don't want you to demand a request, like you said. I believe.
Well, okay, say request, sure.
So
but
is that safer than saying demand?
Well, I guess it depends on their prejudices, but, you know, they're really the same thing in a sense. If the law is on your side, a demand. All right, the difference between a request and a demand is a demand is you're after something that's owed to you, whereas in a request, you're asking them to do a favor. That's about the best I can come up with. Not sure that's enough, but that's how I'm struck by it.
You know, it's your sovereign. You have every right to demand.
Sure. Order, in fact. Okay, so now,
question.
One of the little tricks we did, yes?
What kind of actions can create contempt in court?
All of them. Look, the purpose of contempt, there's only two purposes. The first purpose is to maintain the dignity of the court. If you got somebody yelling and screaming, let's put tape over his mouth. Okay? The second purpose of contempt is to preserve the authority of the court. And this is where the judge was bucking the authority of the court.
So this is only in court, nothing outside the court, like not showing up or anything like that?
No, that's a disrespect to the authority of the court. They ordered you show up and you didn't.
So contempt of court's only in the session of the court?
No. No. There's indirect contempt and there's direct contempt.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're ordered to show up and you don't, you've just disrespected the authority of the court. And so, yeah, they can find you in contempt.
Okay.
So that's what it is. So anyway, we did a little trick here. We a lot of this stuff, this is one of our early cases, but we were very, very careful because we're making sure we're doing everything perfectly. We're doing our research, okay? And so that's why we moved pretty slowly. But this, what we were thinking is, how can we make this work? Well, one of the ways you make things work is you help the enemy to save face. Okay? So what we did is we issued an order to seal the papers that related to the contempt. Now, and in our order, in fact, let's see what it says. Here's the order sealing of papers. Very simple order. The court comes down to find that the matter before it is a personnel matter requiring the court's protection of the privacy of the persons herein named. You see, there are certain codes which didn't apply here, but we ran parallel to them. The sovereign chose to run parallel to them. And we said, In the executive branch, personnel matters can be discussed in confidence, whereas other issues must be in public meetings. So we said, well, this looks like a personnel matter. We've got a rebellious judge, and we're not out to sabotage his career. We just want him to respect the authority of the court. So we issued the order to seal the papers. But understand this. Never issue an order unless you intend to enforce it or you intend to do something, okay, that makes it work. So look how we made this work. The attached envelope contains papers pertaining to personnel matters, is hereby ordered sealed. It may be opened only by this court or by the following persons. And we named the clerk, we named the judge, and we named the plaintiff, the sovereign. Okay? So now, if the judge chose to open it up, he was not in violation of our order to seal it. See? That's how we avoided a fight. So there's just a little subtlety there. It may be, let's see, this order to seal may be countermanded either verbally or in writing, temporarily or permanently, at any time in or out of court session by the clerk and by the judge, acting in common agreement between themselves. So we're helping them save face. If they want to open it up, that's just fine with us. But as far as we're concerned, we're ordering it sealed. Okay? Well, it concerned them. So, all right, this envelope contains the following papers: a notice of motion, motion for contempt, the affidavit of William Jones, and the affidavit of a witness. And so the now what the way we did it was we made a copy of the cover sheet, the first page of each paper. There's four papers there, and so we put all four papers, the covers, the page one of all four papers on the outside of the envelope. So you could see the caption, but you saw nothing of the detail. We left that blank down below. Okay? So it says right here, a copy of the caption page of each paper must be attached to the outside of the envelope. So that was our little political game. Okay? And the judge became very friendly toward us. I mean, he saw that we were not out to undermine him. Plus, what we were doing threw up a fence around him to protect him from his bosses. We had real law, and he was obligated to obey it, and he could tell his bosses that he did not enforce policy because he was fenced in. Okay? And so he relaxed. He started enjoying the show. And that's the judge. That's the judge that raked over the attorney, telling the attorney how the attorney was responsible for all the delays and screw-ups and whatever. You know? So it was a good... It worked out well.
Saving face for all.
Yes, that's what it was. We were saving face. So, okay. So then, here was the notice. Motion for contempt, confidential, personnel matter. And see how we said to all interested parties, please take notice in such and such a date, etc. We're going to have the above entitled court located at 1313 Bastille Street in Megalopolis, California. Okay, and William Jones will move this court for an order of contempt. All right, now we have the motion for contempt. So, and what's that? Okay, and so see how we did this? On the first page, we said, comes now William Jones and moves the above entitled court. And then the remainder of this page is filled in order to force information onto the next page. Okay? And so we continue the sentence. Comes now William Jones and moves the above entitled court to find, I hold the filings, a deputy clerk of said court and or Roy Legume, a magistrate of said court, to be in either civil contempt or criminal contempt or both, but not in misdemeanor contempt of the above entitled court. There are three kinds of contempt. I'd forgotten about that. Civil, criminal, and misdemeanor. And I think the misdemeanor involves jail time. Whereas the criminal contempt did not. And we were not trying to put him in jail. That's why we made the exemption and made the motion that way. Again, we're telegraphing a message. We're saying, look, guys, we have the power. but we're not using it. Now, you know, a bank account with interest grows, all right, because of the interest. But if you start drawing out of it, even though you have the interest, it starts getting smaller again. And that's exactly how power works. The more you use your power, the less you have. Okay, it's easy to deplete your power. But when you show your power without using it, you have a greater effect in the long run. And that's what we did here. We made the motion, we're going to do this, but the way we conducted it, we're not really threatening them. See, we're showing a lot of consideration for these people. Okay, this motion involves a personnel matter relating to court personnel. For that reason, as well as to protect the privacy and personal community standing of the alleged contemners, this motion is presented to the court in confidence, known only to the alleged contemners, witnesses, and the court. However, if the alleged contemners or the court wish to make this matter public, William Jones has no objection. Okay. This motion is made on the grounds that said subjects of the court willfully conspired to and did create and enter into the record of the above entitled court a paper falsely purporting to be duly constituted order of said court. The consequence of said paper is to interfere with the conduct of the business of the court and subsequently the rights of the parties to orderly due process and the authority and dignity of the court. William Jones further moves the court to issue such orders as may be necessary to enforce the rights of the parties and the authority and dignity of the court. These motions are based on the pleadings, records, and files of the court and the attached declarations of William Jones and I saw it. It's fun to make up these names. Now, so we have the notice of the motion, we have the motion. That's right down that checklist of what every paper has to have. Now we have to have the facts. So, affidavit of witness. And so here's the affidavit. Again, we did what we did to keep the real information off the front page because we were anticipating it being copied. And so here is the testimony on paper of I saw it. On June 7th, I saw William Jones present for filing the First Amended Action of Trespass and Trespass on the Case to a woman who identified herself as I hold a filings. At first refused to file the First Amended action because she said there is no order on file authorizing the filing. Jones informed filings that there is an order on file. She looked further, appeared to find the order, and appeared to read portions of it. Filings again refused to file the First Amended action. Jones then requested that filings mark and file the paper as filed on demand. Now see, filed on demand is an important concept. You go up to the clerk and you want that clerk to file that paper. But that clerk is refusing to. Why? Who knows? She's got an unwritten order from the judge. Maybe there's a policy or something. But what's really wrong in this scene is that the clerk is acting like a judicial officer and passing judgment on the qualifications of your paper, whether it can be filed or not. Now, she has a problem because, after all, her future job promotions depend on how well she gets along with the judge and carries out his mission. So here you come in, the sovereign of the court, and you put her in a bind because you're the real boss. But that isn't going to help her. So what you do is you say to the clerk, file on demand. And she reaches under the counter and pulls out a little rubber stamp, all the courts have it, and stamps it, filed on demand. Okay? Now, when the judge gets the paper that he really wished you hadn't filed, he won't blame the clerk because he can see by that stamp that you knew the game. Okay? And so the clerk had no choice but to file it because, at best, the only authority she has is to be a warehouseman to hold the papers. That's it. She stores the papers. That's her job. And that's her basic job. So it gets filed in. And the judge does the judicial function, excepting for the fact that in a court of record, he can't make any decisions. Okay, so that's how you get your papers into the court, filed on demand. Very important thing to remember. So, anyway, so we go through all this, and so she Jones then requested that filings mark and file the papers as filed on demand. Filings again appeared to read portions of the order. She marked the first amended action filed on demand and returned a conformed copy to Jones. Conformed copy is important. That is your receipt. Okay, that's your proof you filed it. So whenever you go up to the clerk's window, always get a conformed copy. All that means is that she takes your copy and stamps it with the same stamp that she used for the filing. Okay? That, and then if anything happens, because clerks lose papers too, so how do they know you filed it timely? Well, there's your receipt. Guard it. Okay? I declare a penalty of perjury and so forth. Okay? So that is the affidavit of one of the witnesses. Then you have a second affidavit, which is essentially the same thing. All right. Then, so you have the motion for contempt, which sets a date. Okay. I think we have a date on here. Yeah, a date was obtained from the clerk for the court to hear the motion. Okay. You show up on that date. The judge is sitting on the bench. That doesn't mean he has authority. They're just renting the property to you for that moment.
So all of these are filed all together?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure. You file those papers together. Notice, motion, and affidavits. Okay. All right? You don't need points and authorities in this case. If you read the actual code, we were going lockstep with the civil code. No, the Code of Civil Procedure on how to process this contempt. And in this case, this is one case where they do not require you to have lost my train of thought here.
Points and authorities.
Yeah, points and authorities and argument. Okay, yeah.
How did you get the date before attempting to file?
You walk up to the clerk, you ask for a date.
And you just write it
Yeah,
in.
And if you're at the wrong window, they say go down to the motion desk or the motion law and motion window. That's typically in the small courts. The clerk does everything. In the big courts, they start specializing. And so they'll have one clerk who does nothing but set court dates.
Can I assume L.A. is one of the big ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
That, in fact, that's so big, they probably have one that sets it, another one who takes them off calendar. No, I mean, that place is massive.
Okay. Are the clerks always female? The male clerks?
No, there's male clerks occasionally, yeah. Oh. Yeah, but it seems like ladies seem to gravitate to that job. Probably be, well, see, we don't want them to get into higher positions.
I went to check about the civil for a lawsuit in the city of Glendale, and they told me that if I didn't know what kind of paperwork that I needed, they wouldn't be able to help me.
That's right. So they cannot give you advice.
Right.
However, the trick is when you walk up to the clerk window, you tell the clerk what you want to do. And then you say, what do you require? They can tell you what they require, but they can't tell you what to do. Okay, that's how you get around that. In the California rule, in the Orange County rules of court, I've seen specifically where the clerks are instructed to be helpful. But being helpful is different from giving advice. Now, how do they be helpful? You ask them what's required.
Okay. So, Bill, how did we, in our court of record case, jump 2 years ahead? Because the clerks are always in shock. How did you get this through so fast? What did we do that was so different?
Well, what we did was we kept it simple.
Because it jumped 2 years ahead of everybody else. It was like on the fast track.
We never had hearings and stuff, really. Not genuinely. It was all paperwork moving through the system.
Oh, it's really fast. Mm-hmm. We just said, you should be 2 years in the future.
Yeah, well, that's because everybody's waiting for a judge to hear in their hearings. But see, that's another thing. When in the normal process, you now know, you first have somebody take the first step, whether it's an action or it's a motion, okay? You take the first step. Then the other side has to answer, and he has 30 days. That's casting concrete, all right, or 20 days, whatever it is. I think it's 20 days for motions and 30 days for complaints, all right? So then you've got, I guess, 20 or 30 days. Well, in the case of a motion, let's talk about motions specifically. You have, they have 20 days to answer, and you have 5 days to reply, and then there's 5 days for the court to review it, and then you have your hearing date. Now, the courts don't have to move fast, and so they might take a year to hear your motion because of their caseloads. But at least you're required to meet these time requirements, because the original concept was that they needed the 5 days in order to review the papers from both sides. Now, why do they have hearings? The reason they have hearings is only because that is an opportunity for the court to ask you questions in case there's something the court does not understand. Okay? You had your piece. You said it in your papers. They said it in their papers. Both of you had plenty of time to... You had all the time in the world to put your motion together. But once it got filed, they had 20 days, which is normally more than enough time to answer. And then you had 5 days to respond to reply to the answer. And that normally is more than enough time. So there's no, how should I say this? Lost my train of thought again. Maybe I should have got more sleep last night. The reason they have hearings, since all the information is in, you don't need a hearing. Okay? Now, if you file a, I know this by personal experience, if you file a motion in court in Florida, specifically in Broward County, where I was, they don't set a date for a motion. If they don't understand something, they call you and say, you got to come in on a certain date so we can talk to you. All right? And they have the hearing then. Huh?
Broward County, oh, they're the worst. They refuse to acknowledge sovereign at all.
Well, that maybe you didn't do it right.
Well, I filed everything right. They just refused to acknowledge, and so I had to fly there and burn the prosecutor at the stake, and then the judge goes, she's right. The case is completely dismissed, and then when the judge walked out, all mm-hmm. the people, the girls that helped the judge, you know, the two that are mm-hmm. right there, they go, that's the best paperwork I've ever seen. Are you an attorney?
Mm-hmm.
I said,
great.
I don't want to be, put myself into that.
Right. Yeah, very good. Well, they probably were on your side anyway, you know, because with people with that attitude. You know, the clerks, I find the clerks are generally pretty good. I mean, unless they're stupid or something, you know, and then they go with the system, whatever, they think that God's up there. Gosh, I had a friend one time. I'd known him when he was a bill collector and he was going to law school. And he eventually became a commissioner in the Los Angeles school court system. And so I went down there to visit him. I had a luncheon appointment. We were going to go out and have lunch and just talk, you know. And I wanted to ask him a few questions now that he was on that inside track. As it turned out, he didn't know anything, you know. But I went down there. And as I walked into at the appointed time, the courtroom was empty except for this one clerk. He was a guy. And he glared at me. Okay? I mean, he really showed an attitude. You know, like, what the hell are you doing here? All right? He just glared at me. And then I announced that I had a luncheon appointment with the commissioner. And this guy did a remarkable transmission. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He'll be right out, sir. I'll go get him. You can come right in, you know. I mean, this guy would have cleaned the floor if he had long hair. I'm telling you. It was just a terrible, spineless character. It just, you know, it made you sick, really, almost. And so I talked to my friend. I said, what is this? You know, because I knew this guy. This commissioner was, he was a pretty decent guy, and he... You know, he didn't put up with much crap, you know. And he says, yeah, he says, I know. He says, I have to put up with it, you know. But it's amazing. Just amazing. That's all I can say. Okay, well, anyway, this is the motion for contempt. So after we had the contempt, or when we had this contempt, we put this in, we got the hearing date. Now, here's the transcript of what occurred on that hearing date. And this might be instructive for you. Okay. The court says, now remember, this hearing is because we're accusing the judge who is sitting on the bench of being in contempt of court. All right? Okay, says, He says the law in motion six. Okay, Jones versus Smith. And good morning, Your Honor. Jones is the moving party here, the plaintiff. The judge says, "How are you?" He says, "Fine." And the judge says, "I don't see the other side, I guess." "Well, this issue doesn't concern the other side," says Jones. "Well, everything on a case concerns the other side." "Okay." The judge says, "And they should have been noticed, really, but that's okay. What other hearings?" "This is on your motion to have, I guess, myself and I hold a filings, who is one of our supervising clerks, to be held in contempt." "Yeah, that's correct." And the court read your moving party, moving parties, moving papers, and your statements, and I have all these documents in the file, and I did some research on this yesterday. Do you have anything you wish to add, Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones says, "Well, the only question I have at this point in time concerns Ms. Filing's certified document where she states that she was directed to do what she did. My question would be, who is the entity that ordered her to do so? I do not know who that would be at this time." And judge says, "Well, if you looked in the file, there's a certificate, an order vacating documents, which says filed June the 9th that I signed on June the 9th. There's his admission, okay? That bears my signature, and it's in the file too, okay? Or you're the entity who directed her to do what she did?" "I said, pursuant to the certificate of the clerk and good cause appearing, it is hereby ordered that the First Amended action of trespass on the case is hereby vacated," end quote. The Jones says, "Okay, I understand that aspect of the certification, but she states she was directed to do so." "Uh-huh," says the judge. "I wish to know the entity that directed her to do that." "Well, I did. I just said I did. The California Superior Court did, State of California." So Jones says, "Well, that's the only point I need to clarify at this point in time. Remember, this is a hearing. And why is the hearing being held? Because the court needed to clarify this point. Who signed that certificate?" Okay. "Who issued the order?" Okay. So he says, "The court and the judge says, in and for the County of Calamity, the Superior Court, by myself, in and for the County of Calamity." It's right in the file. And Jones says, "Well, I didn't see that the way it read. That's my inquiry. Anything else you wish to add?" He says, "No, if anybody else has anything to say in the matter, that's what the sovereign's saying, okay?" And the judge says, "Well, I do in terms of ruling." "Okay." And the judge says, "California, and I've spoken to you before about, we may have differences of legal opinion here, but I've spoken to you before about the fact that you brought the lawsuit in the State of California Superior Court. And that you would, therefore, because nobody is compelling you to utilize our facilities, but you have chosen to file the lawsuit against the people you had a traffic accident, allegedly had a traffic accident with some time ago." And Jones says, "Excuse me, could you speak up a bit?" The judge says, "Yes. You, I hope you don't have a tape recorder going again, Mr. Jones." "Oh, no, I haven't." And he says, the judge says,
"I have a question right now.
Yeah.
Aren't you legally allowed to record?"
"No."
"Really?"
"Unless you get the judge's permission." And, of course, they always say no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's in the rules. I've read it myself.
Okay.
You've got to get the okay. If you get the okay, fine. No problem.
Do they have to okay?
No. And so they always say no. Okay. These guys are afraid of tape recorders.
I bet they are.
Sure.
I have been in court where I was asking how do they record the thing, and they told me to bring my own tape recorder. When I brought it, they said that they're going to tape record, but nobody told me I couldn't, so I still tape recorded. And when I was caught tape recording, the cop started screaming at me, but
sure.
The judge said it was okay, I was welcome to
Yeah, because you had made arrangements. The
clerk of the court.
Yeah, the marshal didn't know about that prior arrangement, see? So, you know, that can happen. There's confusion sometimes in the court.
So I asked you, if I really wanted to legally record, you said I could make an order to record?
Well, actually, theoretically you could, but, you know, don't buck the system too much. Remember, you're in charge, all right? And even though you're in charge, you still have this image problem. So put your power where it counts. Don't do the petty stuff. Look, you're going to make the decision anyway. You know, who's BSing who, right? You're there, they're there. You know the truth, they know the truth.
So it's okay to at least ask for a tape recording?
I would not ask permission per se. I would be kind of sneaky about it by saying that something like, I think I'd like to bring a tape recorder in. Do you mind?
Or is the court stenographer available today?
Well, that's another thing you can do too. Sure. And you can... And
if,
sometimes you...
If not, I'd like to go ahead and record this.
I'd like to go ahead and record this, because
sure.
It should provide a court stenographer to document everything is what they should do.
But they change it.
And then you pay for it when you demand it.
If it's a criminal court, you don't.
Like that's a different story,
If you're like a traffic ticket or something.
Sure, sure. But then you have the problem that you know, the stenographer sometimes will alter the record anyway.
Yes.
And they mm-hmm. do that even if they tape record it, they will the tape that they sell you.
Oh yeah, they edit it.
Is edited, yeah.
Sure, sure.
Everything that's illegal, they blank it out.
Sure.
Get a copy of it.
Yeah, but you know what? I used to be very concerned about that, but once you understand the basic issues of who's boss and what you're ordering and they're disobeying, or if they issue an order, they're wrong from the get-go. It doesn't matter how good the order is. I mean, I vacate orders that are made in my favor, okay? I may reissue it, all right, over my signature. I do not let the judge make a decision without my permission. And you'll see how this works down here.
And so basically what you're doing with this is you have now gotten it into the court of record, on record.
This is the
That he has tried to make the mm-hmm. illegal call when that's not his position. I understand.
So those bigger issues, namely the issue of who's boss, is so much easier to deal with than the little ones. You know, I mean, it's very clear. Court of record, judge can't make a decision. 100%. You know, it's not a question of discretion. It's flat out no. Okay, so continuing on. He says, I don't care, frankly, but you have to ask. And the rules of court, and I told you before, and that's what I'm trying to inform you of now, you've chosen this as your forum to bring the business dispute into. And when your lawsuit, your litigating, is in the Superior Court, I notified you previously that I'm obligated because of my position. And because you brought the lawsuit utilizing the Superior Court of the State of California, But nobody is compelling you to use this form. I'm telling you that, and I've told you previously that the rules have to be followed as established by the California Judicial Council and the California State Legislature. When they adopted the California Code, you notice how he's going through all this talking? They don't normally do this. They usually slam dunk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's because the judge kind of got the picture where the real authority mm-hmm. is, see? And he's starting to pussyfoot a little. He's still trying to find the weak point and still, you know, kind of putting a little pressure on. But in a way, you can see it's not as solid as you've seen in other cases. So anyway, he says, when they adopted the California Code of Civil Procedure and those rules that govern our proceedings in the trial court, California Code of Civil Procedure, Section 1209, that's 1209, provides a list of acts or admissions which constitute contempt. Section 1209 in no manner allows for a court to hold itself in contempt on the motion of a party to a case being heard by the court. But see, the court's not being held in contempt, is it? It's the judge. That's different from a court. See, he's trying to take advantage of... Actually, attorneys think a court and a judge, those are like interchangeable words. They're not. Yeah. Additionally, you have failed to claim that the clerk or holder of filings committed any of the acts or admissions that constitute contempt under Section 1209 of the California Code of Civil Procedure. Therefore, your motion is entirely devoid of merit, and I so rule and deny the motion. Jones says, well, okay, well, for the record, I object. I understand that. Okay. All right. I don't know when the next court hearing is, Mr. Jones. Well, at this point, there's a CMC scheduled for Monday. That's a case management conference. Okay, well, have a good weekend. I'm going to need a copy of that. The judge says, you need a transcript? He says, yes. Okay, she'll make arrangements with you. Okay. And so that was the end of that day. Okay. Pretty reasonably friendly. All right. And yet the judge made an attempt to rule, and he immediately got an objection. See? Okay. So now what happened after that? Well, what happened after that is the ruling came through. Now, this hearing was October 14th, and the ruling came down on February 2nd. Why? Because the court moves at its own speed. Okay?
Because what?
The court moves
at its own speed.
At its own speed. Or in other words, I was busy. Now, it wasn't my case, but I was doing the paperwork in this case. So here's the ruling. You're going to love some of the wording in this. So now, what I try to do when I write a ruling, I try to kind of follow the pattern that the Supreme Court follows when they write their rulings. And you get a sense of that by reading a lot of rulings. So I suggest, as part of your reading diet, that you read Supreme Court rulings. You know, browse cases and notice how they're organized. Okay, so here we are. We have this this ruling regarding motion for contempt. Okay, comes now the court to review the law, the facts, and the record, and to rule accordingly. We got a summary here. Oliver Wendell Holmes once wrote, "I long have said there is no such thing as a hard case. I am frightened weakly, but always when you walk up to the lion and lay hold, the hide comes off and the same old donkey of a question of law is underneath."
Excuse me. Is this your...
ruling.
This is yours, okay.
Yeah, right. This is after the judge had denied it, right?
Right.
Now we're making the ruling. "Through unplanned circumstance, duty falls upon this court of record to lay hold of the lion, unhide the underlying question of law, and do what is necessary to preserve the rights of the parties to orderly due process and the good conduct of the business of this court, and to vindicate the authority and dignity of this court in the face of an apparent modern palace rebellion." I kind of like that. I was feeling good when I wrote that.
I really like that.
Yeah, it gets better. "The question before this court is whether acts of the accused persons are contempts of the authority of this court. According to the moving party's affidavit, the accused understood or should have understood that the court expected that the plaintiff would file a First Amended action. According to the moving party's affidavit, the day following the filing of the First Amended action, the accused conspired to remove the paper and did remove the paper from the official court records. The moving party requests that this court invoke its contempt powers to preserve the rights of the parties to orderly due process and the good conduct of the business of this court and to vindicate the authority and dignity of this court. No objection as to the sufficiency of the affidavit was presented to this court during the fact-finding phase of the trial. During the conclusionary phase, the magistrate did opine his own personal view. However, an objection was raised, and the objection was not overruled, but sustained by implication." Right? When he objected, the judge did not overrule the objection. Therefore, the objection stands.
Mm-hmm. What if he would have overruled?
Well, he's not authorized to. We have maybe a different issue, but you know, he's still vulnerable to the disorder. Notice, I want you to notice how heavily footnoted this is. See this? We got, look at all these footnotes. Mm-hmm. Because we're taking it out of the transcript and other references. Let's just take a look at note 2, which brings us here. See? This was from the transcript, 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 plaintiff's exhibit. Okay? So we just really picked at it.
This is the crap I hate, though, going back and forth and back.
What do you mean back and forth?
Look, checking all these notes and going back.
Oh, no. Well, when the trouble is, this was in web page format. In the actual paper, Every footnote was at the bottom of the page.
Oh, okay.
It was at the foot of the page. Yeah, I understand. Mm-hmm. However, I want you to notice something. We click on the footnote, okay? That was note 2. We click on note 2, and it goes back up to that note.
Where it was about the internet.
Yeah, you can do stuff like that, yeah.
But when you're actually reading it, it's a drag.
Okay, sealing of the records. Although the contempt hearing is held in open court, the papers of this personnel matter are ordered sealed to protect the privacy of the subject persons. This ruling may be either verbally or in writing ordered unsealed and so forth. Okay, you know that bit. Okay, we go through who appeared, all right, and I hold the filings did not appear, though she had been served notice. And so the following is organized into four sections: judicial cognizance, findings of fact, discussions and conclusions of law, impeachment and penalty. So the judicial cognizance. This court takes judicial cognizance and decrees as follows. See, that's the sovereign speaking. This is the law. Okay? Judicial cognizance. That is judicial notice or knowledge upon which a judge is bound to act without having it proved in evidence. See, there's judicial notice and there's judicial cognizance. Judicial notice means that the court takes notice of something. It's a legal thing to be considered, but then the court can either accept or reject depending on whether it really applies to the case. Judicial cognizance, it must be accepted and applied to the case. There's no choice. And so that's the order of the sovereign, that we will take judicial cognizance of these things. Okay, so the, now, and now we get here, it is the public policy of this state, etc. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty. Okay, you know that one. And so we go down here, and here's some interesting things. Laws, whether organic or ordinary, are either written or unwritten. Okay, they recognize the unwritten law. That's the common law. A written law is that which is promulgated in writing and of which a record is in existence. Okay, that would be the legislature, in other words. The organic law is the constitution of government and is altogether written. Other written laws are denominated statutes. The written law of this state is therefore contained in its constitution and statutes and in the constitution and statutes of the United States. See? Now, somebody said here that they were told that federal law does not apply in this state. Okay, well, here it is. It's Code of Civil Procedure, Section 1896. No, Section 1897. Okay? Any judicial record may be impeached by evidence of a want of jurisdiction in the court or judicial officer. Was there a want of jurisdiction here? Right, yeah.
California Code of Civil Procedure. When I use it in criminal court, meaning traffic court, they try to tell me that the Code of Civil Procedure does not apply in criminal.
That's correct, because that's civil law, not criminal law. They're right.
So then if it's, if, okay.
Different jurisdiction.
But when they reply to me, they use the same Code of Civil Procedure. Only
understand
when
that.
Understand
that. Yep. Who says, you know, they have a lot of discretion. You got to take it away from them. You do it with a counterclaim. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or an original claim, either way. Okay, so notice that. It can be impeached for collusion between the parties. Did we have collusion here between the judge and the clerk?
Yes.
Okay. Or a fraud in the party offering the record in respect to the proceedings. It can impeach the record. And then we go into sovereignty, what sovereignty is. And let's see. We have basically what a court is, declaration of rights that cannot be construed to impair or deny others. State cannot diminish the rights. Assertion of federal rights, when plainly and reasonably made, is not to be defeated under the name of local practice. Local practice could be state laws. Okay. And let's see, Miranda decision. Yeah, we got the Miranda decision here. All right, what's a Republican form of government? Let's see, what time is it approximately? Yeah, so we got plenty of time. I'm dipping more into philosophy. We're actually at the last stages of this form stuff. I hope you saw some benefit in that. But now I'm because we're so well along, I'm tarrying more, spending more time on this philosophical stuff.
And this is a masterpiece here. This is great.
I'm glad you like it. but wait till we get to the fun part. This is just the setup stuff, okay? But anyway, what's a Republican form of government? Let me explain that to you. And I'll start off by explaining a democracy, okay? A democracy, basically 51 beats 49, okay? So what this means is that 49, the minority, has no rights. They must obey the dictates of the majority. That's what a democracy is. You get all these people arguing together, and then they vote. And whatever the group says, that's the way it's going to be. That's mandated. Why? The sovereignty is in the group when you have a democracy. All right? Not in the individuals. A republic is in every detail. Anything you can say about a democracy, a republic is the same. It's silly to refer to a democratic republic. That's like saying a democratic democracy. Okay? Or a republic-type republic. It's double talk. All right? There's no difference between a democracy and a republic except one simple point. And that is that the sovereignty in a republic is in each individual person. Now remember, sovereignty means no accountability to higher authority. The only way you get accountability is if you cause an injury. Other than that, hey, nobody can tell you anything. Pretty good, huh? Mm-hmm. So when the group in a republic votes, the rules that come out of that are suggestive, not mandatory. If they were mandatory, you wouldn't be sovereign. Go ahead. Sure.
If you caused injury, isn't it rightful to just compensate the parties you caused the injury to instead of becoming subject to the law of the state and be put on probation and all kinds of stuff that had nothing to do with you compensating the parties of the injury you caused?
The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. Okay? There is no authority for the state to prosecute any of the people. They can prosecute the citizens, but not the people.
So how do people compensate each other? How do the sovereigns compensate each other in a way to keep the courts at bay and not allow them to interfere with this?
Well, the perfect way is for the injured party to sue in a court of record, asserting his sovereignty.
How about if the injured party is not suing and the person that caused the damage just wants to compensate them?
You mean the injury?
Perpetrator.
Yeah, they can work it out among themselves. Yeah, if you see two guys in a parking lot duking it out, and there's a policeman nearby, and if they're both people, he has absolutely no authority to interfere until one of them calls for help. That's his authority. Then he can go in and pick and choose to help the person who hollered for help. He can't help the other person because the other person didn't holler for help. Okay. So he has to have his sovereign authority to interfere. But when you're talking about citizens, well, then he becomes a law enforcer instead of a peacekeeper. See, what is a citizen of the United States? It tells you in the 14th Amendment. It's somebody who is born or naturalized. That's the first condition. And the second condition is, and subject to the jurisdiction. Okay? People are not subject to the jurisdiction. If they were, they wouldn't be sovereign. They're not accountable to higher authority. See? Or naturalized. Sure. Sure, you're born or naturalized and subject to the... See, you can be born or naturalized and not subject to the jurisdiction. If you're a people. Okay, so anyway, continuing on here. So that's what the difference is between a democracy and a republic. It's where is the sovereignty? Sovereignty is in the group for the democracy, in the individual for republic. In a republic, the laws are suggestive, advisory. In a democracy, they're mandatory.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard the joke of democracy is really, when not attached to a republic, is two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner.
Yes, right. That is true. Two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. That's a democracy.
So according to the law, being born or naturalized to be a sovereign, does this have to be filed as well? To be filed.
No.
You're sovereign because you say you're sovereign.
You're sovereign until your ignorance proves you can't handle that. Okay, you know, there are a lot of wolves out there. You know, they want to take you over. They're only too happy to. Yeah.
Another thing maybe you might
louder so they can hear.
Want to say is about that, not to argue a point, that you don't want to bring up?
Well, yeah, one of my favorite attorneys is Abraham Lincoln. And what makes him my favorite is, as I got some good advice from him through the books. He said, if you don't want to argue a point, don't bring it up. Okay? So, okay. The state of California is an inseparable part of the United States, and the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And that's in the California Constitution, Article 3, Section 1. Okay, quotes the Constitution again. Okay, what is a court? Person in suit of the sovereign. The place where the sovereign sojourns with his regal retinue, wherever that may be.
Why would they put the Black's Law Dictionary fifth edition when the fourth edition has all of the qualifications?
Well, it happened to be within reach on my desk. And it was perfectly good. It looked good to me. Okay.
Is it you that actually does recommend fourth or prior, though?
Yeah.
I thought it was your
website. Sure. Well, see, I like both dictionaries because the fourth and earlier gives me law. The fifth and later gives me policy. I mean, you got to know your enemy, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think, was it the eighth edition where they dropped out all of the legal references? I think that was the one. There are no legal cites, no case law cites in that dictionary. It really made a lot of attorneys mad. They had to, well, I guess maybe it was the seventh edition, and the eighth one they started putting them back in. That was a big mistake on their part.
Is using words and phrases, would that be an equivalent? Perhaps?
Well, words and phrases is a set of volumes. Or what are there, something like 50 volumes or 100? I don't know, something like that. It's a very good set of books. I mean, there are a lot of respected works out there that are really great. And you can learn how to speak English from reading those books, real legal English. It's amazing. What do they have, 4 or 5 pages just on the word to, T-O?
Yeah.
Been a lot of battles fought over that word. Okay. Well, we have basically, here's the court of record, all the requirements. Okay. Judicial tribunal having attributes and exercise functions independently of the person of the magistrate. So that's your independence right there. Common law, keeps a record, power to fine or imprison, and generally possesses a seal. The fifth requirement is optional. There were a lot of poor kings who couldn't afford to make a seal. And then here it is, section 808 of the Penal Code. The following persons are magistrates: judges of the superior courts, and then I left out a lot. That's what the dots indicate. Okay, well, let's kind of...
Mm-hmm. Did you say the court of records, it's created by the people the court of records?
The court of record?
Yeah.
Well, it is because it's common law, it operates to our benefit better than the statutory courts do.
Right, but is it something when we state that to the judges, is it then created that way, or otherwise it's a...
When you originally file your action,
right,
that's where you specify the case. And so right in your first line, you say, and in this court of record complain of, you just selected the forum right there.
Okay, got it.
See, it got by you, even though I explained it before.
Yeah.
Think of the trouble judges and attorneys have trying to spot it. You know, it's kind of neat. It's so innocuous. And yet it's so powerful. Mm-hmm. And then you turn around, and then when you vacate an order, at that point it's cast in concrete by the time you get to that point, and there's just nothing they can do to argue against you. They've accepted it because they failed to timely object. And even if they did timely object, there's still no legal basis to buck it. I mean, it's part of our system. Mm-hmm. A court of record is as defined in those 4 points. Now, here's section 1209. The sovereign decided to use 1209 of the Code of Civil Procedure because, after all, the judge likes the civil code. And this concerns him, and we want to use a source of law that he respects, right? Want to be fair. Okay, so here's what the code says. The following acts or omissions in respect to a court of justice or proceedings thereon are contempts of the authority of the court. Misbehavior in office or other willful neglect or violation of duty by an attorney, counsel, clerk, sheriff, coroner, or other person appointed or elected to perform a judicial or ministerial service. Does that sound like a judge? You get that? They didn't say judge. They named all the job titles, but when they came to the judge, they said appointed or elected to perform a judicial or ministerial service. Why didn't they just say judge? Because they don't want you to know. And it's amazing how this stuff hides from people's eyes. Abuse of the process or proceedings of the court, or falsely pretending to act under authority of an order or process of the court. Disobedience of any lawful judgment, order, or process of the court. Any other unlawful interference with the process or proceedings. These were picked out because these are the things we're concerned about in this. Disobedience by an inferior tribunal, magistrate, or officer of the lawful judgment, order, or process of a superior court, or proceeding in an action or special proceeding contrary to law after such action or special proceeding is removed from the jurisdiction of such inferior tribunal, magistrate, or officer. Well, this is his second go-around. We'd found him, we vacated one of his orders once before. Actually, we rescinded it, which means it's no good from the beginning. And so here he is disobeying that prior order. That's why we pulled this one in. Okay. And then, notwithstanding Section 1211 or any other provision of law, if an order of contempt is made affecting an attorney, his agent, investigator, or any person acting under the attorney's direction in the preparation and conduct of any action or proceeding, the execution of any sentence shall be stayed pending the filing within 3 judicial days of a petition for extraordinary relief testing the lawfulness of the court's order. So basically, what they're saying is if you're an attorney and you're found in contempt of court, they have to back off 3 days while you come back at them with your own paperwork. That's a special thing for attorneys. And this became significant later on in this writing. What we did was we extended that privilege to the judge. I think we gave him 6 days, okay? Double the time that an attorney gets. Yeah?
What's a judicial day?
Well, that's a normal Monday through Friday, court days. Okay. And now we get into the various kinds of contempt. You can read this later, I guess. But it's basically, you remember there's 3 kinds of contempt: civil, criminal, and misdemeanor. And so the differences are explained in the codes. So we go down here. Now we go to the findings of fact. And basically replay the history of what happened. So this is all factual stuff. And we've been through this before in the other papers and so forth. And we're saying that the magistrate of this court has usurped the independent powers and so forth. But here's the fun part. Discussion and conclusions of law. Let's see. William Jones filed an action of trespass for damages. The opening sentence decreed, this is a court of record, in defendant's demurrer and later his answer, there was no objection to the court being a court of record. Nowhere in the record is there any objection from magistrate or defendants regarding this court being a court of record. So we're really locking this in, although the California Constitution specifically says that all the courts are courts of record anyway. But this is kind of a nice touch, you know. Nobody complained. We wanted it. We got it. So on May 5th, 1999, this court determined that William Jones is one of the people as contemplated in the preambles of the Constitution. This court is a court of record and all parties were properly so apprised. See note 21. Building on that, the court issued a show cause writ of error. Throughout the writ, the concept of a court of record was asserted. The magistrate, plaintiff, and defendants were each invited to file and serve on all other interested parties a brief no later than June 7 to show cause why the order should not take effect or should be modified. See, we had issued a prior order. We said, let us know if we're wrong. Nobody did a thing. No objections or briefs were served or filed. The magistrate and parties, by their lack of action and lack of objection, tacitly accepted the writ and its supporting papers. It is a design of our system of jurisprudence that courts have no jurisdiction until a party comes forth and declares a cause needing resolution. The particular jurisdiction depends upon how the cause is declared by the plaintiff. Jurisdiction may be administrative, at law, in equity, or in any of many other formats. In this case, the jurisdiction is at law, in a court of record, under the sovereign authority of one of the people. It is essential to understand what are a sovereign, a magistrate, a court, and a court of record. A court is the person in suit of the sovereign. Who is the sovereign? It's the people, either in plural or in singular capacity. And we have little notes here, and let's go into that. All right, so note 25 says people, populace, the body of persons who compose a community, town, city, or nation. We say the people of a town, the people of London or Paris, the English people. In this sense, the word is not used in the plural, but it comprehends all classes of inhabitants considered as a collective body. And that's in Webster's 1828 dictionary. And we like that dictionary because it's close to the Constitution in terms of use of language. Okay. And then note 26 is people considered as any portion of the inhabitants of a city or country. Any portion. That means one. Okay? So you know that the word people can be singular or plural. So going back to this. In singular capacity, in this case it is William Jones, whether people as contemplated in the preambles of the 1849 Constitution for California, the 1879 Constitution for the State of California, and the 1789 Constitution for the United States of America. California, the State of California, and the United States of America have no general sovereignty. Theirs is eclipse sovereignty. Whatever sovereignty they have is limited to their respective constitutionally defined spheres of control. The general sovereignty is reserved to the people without diminishment. Note 27. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country, but they are sovereigns without subject.
I want to stop and ask you. This is actually a little bit off topic, but you're referencing the 1789 Constitution. My question is, how do you go about getting such a copy, which also includes, well, actually, it would have been 1819, that it actually includes that missing 13th Amendment, or can you find such?
Well, I understand those arguments. I've read the histories and so forth, and there's a lot of validity to them, But there's a problem. I'm dealing with ignorance.
Yes, we all are.
Okay? When in China, speak Chinese.
So we pretend it doesn't.
When I'm among the ignorant, I speak ignorantly. Okay. So long as I don't lose my rights when I do so. Okay? So these people are dedicated to the 1879 Constitution, 1849.
Would terrify them.
Well, yeah, I'm here to win. Yes.
Again, a quick question, a little off subject. When you write your paperwork, would you say something along the line that you reserve all constitutional rights and you have the right to be heard by a duly elected judicial officer, or are you going to accept commissioner to hear your case or be in
how
the room while you're making your case?
How does your question fit with the other point, which is the people do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them?
So you're saying it really doesn't matter who is in the room?
Yep. I do not yield. Okay. If a bullet comes toward me, I will duck. But as long as we got law, then I'm going to assert it. And I assert it partly because of what it says and partly because of what their belief systems are. See, I'm not loyal to my belief system. I'm loyal to their belief system as in a way that it works in my favor. Okay, so anyway, that's that note there about basically sovereignty, okay? So then, let's see, we're at 27. Okay, and then we say, the general sovereignty is reserved to the people without diminishment. Lest that be forgotten, the California Government Code twice admonishes the public servants that the people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. Further, when the state of California did attempt to diminish one's rights, it was determined that the state cannot diminish the rights of the people, and we cite the case. Okay. It is by the prerogative of the sovereign whether and how a court is authorized to proceed. In this case, the chosen form of court is that of a court of record, which, of course, is constitutionally supported. This court recognizes the good work of the legislative and judicial branches of the United States of America and has adopted the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure as its own rules. This is compatible with the choice of the California legislature, which expresses its will through the California Code of Civil Procedure, Section 1897, which states in part, "The written law of this state is therefore contained in its Constitution and statutes and in the Constitution and statutes of the United States." The state of California itself recognizes the validity of the laws of the United States of America and adopts those laws as its own. A qualifying feature of a court of record is that the tribunal is independent of the magistrate appointed to conduct the proceedings. The magistrate is appointed, is a person appointed or elected to perform ministerial services in a court of record. This service is ministerial because all judicial functions in a court of record are reserved to the tribunal. And by definition of a court of record, that tribunal must be independent of the magistrate. The non-judicial functions are ministerial because they are absolute, certain, and imperative, involving mere execution of specific duties arising from fixed and designated facts. And that's not my writing. I got that out of a court decision in the Supreme Court.
This is very well worded.
Yeah, I wish I had that talent. I do a lot of copying.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to be using that. That's why I keep asking.
Sure.
Make sure I get a copy of this disc.
What you're reading from right now?
This is the ruling, the contempt ruling.
No, but, I mean, you clicked on that in one of your sections. How do I find that later?
Oh, well, she wants to know what the heading is on this.
You want...
On the CD, you clicked on something to get into this file.
It's part of this presentation. You'll get it. It's part of it. But
what we're talking about right now.
What subheading did you click on?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. It's the ruling.
But before that, you had to get into that before you got to the ruling.
Case yeah.
Under case law.
Case law, yeah.
And then it was ruling.
Yes.
Okay, case law.
And the ruling, this is important enough so that we also have it right at the top of the case law, a link to it.
Ruling, okay.
See? And plus,
we're going to steal this from
that's
you.
Fine. Yeah, and so this series.
You're under right now. We're under contempt.
Contempt, right?
And then under contempt, it's case law. And then under case law, it's under ruling. Okay, so
case log, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's also on the website. I kind of lifted that all over into this. Okay. So now going back, continuing on. Now, let's see. Okay, I've read that first paragraph. Now, here's where it gets kind of fun. You're going to like this. In this instant question, the magistrate unduly, right, violated both common law and equity law, chose to personally bypass all procedure, direct the court deputy clerk to reject the First Amended action, and then sign the accompanying a preprinted order without proper hearing or notice to any of the affected parties. That exceeds the jurisdiction of a magistrate who only possesses ministerial authority separate from the authority of an independent tribunal of a court of record. On more than one occasion, the magistrate has indicated his preference for California rules. See note 34. Plaintiff's Exhibit 15, okay, transcript. We quote several places where he hung himself, okay? So be it for his cause. This court, for purposes of accommodating the accused's choice of law, adopts the California Code of Civil Procedure as it relates to contempt of court. Let there be no doubt as to the justness of this proceeding for the accused. I enjoyed writing that one. Well, look what we did here. Who's the sovereign? And what are the limits of sovereign authority? The only limit is that you don't harm someone else. Okay? Hey, we got this guy we're accusing. He doesn't like the law. Okay, by sovereign authority, we throw the law out. Here, we got a new one for you. Okay?
So you went from common law to civil code of procedure.
Yeah, on a temporary basis, because that's his choice. He committed himself to it, and who are we to be unfair?
Own water burning at the stake.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're makes wrong, a better fire.
You know, in my court and you're wrong in your own court.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. That I just enjoyed writing that paragraph, I'll tell you. So be it for his cause. Okay. And so California Code of Civil Procedure 1209 provides that acts in respect to a court's proceedings are contempts of the authority of the court. if a person who is appointed or elected to perform a ministerial service misbehaves, neglects, or violates a duty, or if a person falsely pretends to act under authority of an order or process of the court, or if a person disobeys any lawful judgment, order, or process of the court, engages in any other unlawful interference with the process or proceedings of a court, or if an inferior magistrate interferes with the lawful judgment, order, or process of a superior court, or proceeding in an action or special proceeding contrary to law, after such action or special proceeding is removed from the jurisdiction of such inferior magistrate. And it was removed from him in a prior order. Okay, so he's guilty of a lot of stuff here. As the magistrate pointed out, Code of Civil Procedure 1209 in no manner allows for a court to hold itself in contempt. That is true. But that is not the issue before this court. The issue is whether or not the accused persons are to be held in contempt. The magistrate holds only a ministerial authority. He holds no tribunal authority and cannot in any way substitute himself as the total equivalent of the court to thus exempt himself from jurisdiction. CCP 1209 provides that contempt may be applied to, quote, misbehavior in office or other willful neglect or violation of duty by an attorney, counsel, clerk, sheriff, coroner, or other persons appointed, etc. Okay? The magistrate is an, quote, other person appointed or elected to perform a ministerial service, as described in the code. Depriving anyone of the right to have his day in court is very serious. The magistrate has a duty to the plaintiff to minister the opportunity to argue the petition put forth by the deputy clerk. He who decides a case with the other side unheard, though he decide justly, is in himself unjust. And that is a quote from Which note was that?
37.
Is himself 37. Okay, right. So we look at 37 here. Yeah, 37. That's Seneca. You know, Seneca was he was one of the high authorities in Greece. We're going back a long ways to get that quote.
Really long.
Yeah.
He's in Rome, though? Seneca? Greece?
Yeah, there's Greece. He was.
I'm going to check that. I think it's Rome. But
yeah, it was Athens. Okay. Yeah, Seneca was a big name in Athens. There's a lot of quotes that are attributed to him. Guy was really sharp.
I got to ask, what was this judge's response to all this? I mean,
I happen to have it. Okay.
Dismissed.
Okay.
Well, he has to, but I just...
Yeah, but then we came back with the ruling. He dismissed it verbally. Never showed up in writing. Okay. We just moved ahead when we had the time. It took us, how long? Several months,
doesn't
anyway.
Doesn't matter. We still yeah. came back with it.
Okay. So then we get back into procedure and so forth, okay? Now, to answer your question... Oh, by the way, do you recognize these names? Or at least the one name, the name of the judge? Yeah, it's Judge Roy Bean. Legume? Okay, everybody know who Judge Roy Bean is?
Yeah.
No? Judge Roy Bean was a guy who set himself up as a judge. He wasn't a real judge. And yet, he played the part of a judge, and a lot of people got executed. He was a tough judge. Nobody ever objected to him being a judge. And he was pretty rough on criminals, but the rest of the people seemed to like him. Okay? And yet, he never was official, and yet, he did official acts. It was in the Wild West days. Okay? So. Yeah, but not officially. Anyway, okay, so you want to know how he reacted to that. Well, right after the ruling was made, we had another hearing almost 2 months later. Transcript number 5. A case management conference was held consisting of the judge, defendant's attorney, and plaintiff were all present. Okay? Overall, the conference was very quiet with minimal contention. The judge seemed to understand that he was acting in a ministerial capacity and not as a judge.
Guess he caved, huh?
Kinda. Here's the transcript. Okay, Jones versus Smith. Good morning, Your Honor. Hello, how are you? Fine. Good morning. That's Mr. Dunno. That's the other attorney. Okay. That was number two, Jones versus Smith, George Dunno for Robert Smith. Judge says, "What do you want me to do this on this case today?" When have you ever heard a judge ask you that? Okay. He's waiting for a sovereign authority.
Right. Now he's
He's caught on.
Put in his place.
And so Jones, who is the sovereign, says, "Well, at this time, I believe we're ready to move forward." So it is. Are you guys getting the message here?
Yeah, this is.
Are you appreciating that?
You really did one hell of a good job on this stuff.
Well, thank you. Okay. So Jones continues on. "So it is my wish." Remember, my wish is your command. That's a legal concept. "So it is my wish that the first amended action be refiled and it be done so in within the next 60 days. You want to file an amended complaint?" Sovereign says, "A first amended action as discussed earlier." No, see, he didn't let that word complaint get by. Okay. He says, first amended action be refiled and that it be done so within the next 60 days. "You want to file an amended complaint?" "A first amended action as discussed earlier." Actually, in the first couple of hearings of this case. Judge says, "Well, whatever. You don't want me to set a trial date yet?" "No. I have to file the first amended action before you can do that." "Okay, make a motion. We'll set another case management conference in this case, and you can..." "Well, you'll have to file a motion to file a first amended action." "Oh? Well, that's how it works, unless they agree to it." Mr. Dunno, the attorney, says, "Well, I was looking... Well, we're just representing Robert Smith. I'm not sure what the first amended action is going to be. Are you going to name some new people?" And Sovereign says, "Well, there are a couple of different issues involved in that, yes. And as far as I understand it, they acquiesced to it. We gave everybody notice, and they had time to object to it. Nobody objected to it. So as far as I'm concerned, it's ready to be what should be filed." The attorney says, "Okay, I'm sorry. It's not my file. I don't have all the details." Yeah, they had a new guy come in, you know, from this attorney firm. And he says, "I don't have all the details. I have that we're defending Robert Smith only. There's somebody else who is going to be brought in, and there's been some discussion on that." And Jones says, "This whole issue has been discussed over the last half dozen months on and off." The attorney says, "Well, I'm not unclear as to what it is about. I'm unclear." And Jones says, "Well, I guess I have to file the First Amendment action to make that clear." The judge says, "Well, they don't agree. You have to file a motion." And Jones says, "Well, I don't know the exact date we notified everybody that we intended to do so. Within the time frame given, as far as I'm concerned, everybody's acquiesced to the filing of the First Amended Action." And judge says, "Well, I don't think, I'll just put it out another 60 days or so for case management, and you'll have to file a notice motion." Jones says, "Well, okay, I'll do the research on that and see what needs to be done then." Attorney says, "Or if it's something we can agree on by stipulation, call and let's talk about it." Sovereign says, "Okay, evidently," and he gets interrupted. He says, "If you're going to be naming anybody else..." And Jones says, "Well, everybody ignored it to date by what's been filed in the file. So like I said, it was notified up." The judge says, "Wait, contempt? That what you're talking about? No, it goes way back farther than that." "Farther than that?" Jones says, "It was probably this. Oh, I don't have my file with me, but it was, but it was at least 6 months ago that we gave notice of filing of the First Amended Action and gave everybody 30 or 60 days in which to respond and object if they so wished to lodge such an objection. Nobody objected, so we moved forward, filed the First Amended Action, which was handled as it was." Judge says, "It got sent..." "Yeah, that's the one that got sent back to you." "Right." And Jones says, "Well, the administrator and procedural issues we've been dealing with to this point..." And the judge says, "Well, the clerk sent it back. They filed it, and then they realized, as I recall, that they..." "Well, here it is, June 9th of 99, about that or on or about that time." Jones says, "Well, maybe more than 6 months ago." "Filed on demand, was filed. First amended action was filed on demand. This is what the clerk said." And Jones says, "Well, I believe even before the hearing, before that you agreed that the first amended action should be filed." Judge says, "Well, I said that you should." Jones says, "Well, I don't remember these." And the card says, well, the problem is I can't remember now. And Jones says, well, it's been a while. The judge says, well, anyway, it got rejected by the court and sent back to Mr. Jones. And then ensued a series of debates over some issues.
Yeah.
Right, like contempt of court, right?
A little bit.
Okay. And the judge continues, but there was a First Amended complaint that was attempted to be filed back June 9th of 99, and I indicated that there was no leave of court or stipulation or duly noticed motion. We can disagree with that still, I suppose, but Jones says, well, I'll have to get to the paperwork, and I'll. And the judge says, but he did attempt to file something, and the attorney says, well, okay. And the judge says, well, so if you don't want me to set a trial date, I won't yet. Well, not yet. I think we need to handle this issue since all the past issues have been resolved. The judge says, you want to come in 60 days? I think that should be fine. Wednesday again? Sure, Wednesdays are great. Wednesdays with, if you know, June 17th and 7th at 8:30. You want official notice? No, I think I'll pass. Attorney waives notice. All right, wait. We'll wait and see what you file. Thank you. And then he filed it. You know, there was no argument the next time.
So it got filed regardless.
Yeah. But you notice how that judge was not the normal aggressive judge, you know? I mean, he was pussyfooting to some degree.
Well, and he pretty much admitted, well, yes, I'm just a
So they filed an
ministerial here.
Amended?
Yeah, the First Amended action did get filed. But now let's go back to transcript number one, the first day we ever met this judge, okay? So I want you to see a little subtle difference in attitude. So you can see that this stuff really does work. Well, you kind of see it anyway, but okay. So they open the case and he goes down and he says they had some discussion about the, he had a tape recorder there, see? So, good morning, sir, says Jones. And the judge says, you're to turn off that recording device or leave the courtroom, one of the two. That's the order of the court. Excuse me, Your Honor. This is, judge says, that's a standing rule of the court. He says, I have a problem hearing, and I can't hear very well. And the judge says, well, we have a court reporter. I do not allow tape recordings in this court. That's a California rule of court, period. See, now that's a lie, because the rules actually say that you can record if you get the permission. It doesn't say you can't. Right. You know. Well, Your Honor, I can't afford her services. Mr. Jones, there are ways to take care of that also. And how would that be? The judge says, well, I'm going to explain some procedures to you. You may leave the recording on as I explain the proceedings to you, and then you're going to turn it off, okay? Very well. Are you an attorney at law, sir? No. You filed a lawsuit in this court. I have to hold you to the same rules. Are you hearing me? And by the way, there's a little link here. Let's see what it says. He says I have to hold you to the same rules. Okay. Okay. Here it is. Set. It says. What was it? Was it 22? Yeah, 22. Okay. We cannot say with assurance that under the allegations of the pro se complaint, which we hold to less stringent standards than formal pleadings drafted by lawyers, it appears beyond doubt that the plaintiff can prove no set of facts in support of his claim which would entitle him to relief. That was Conley versus Gibson and so forth. So you see, they hold him to less stringent standards.
Yeah,
supposed to.
Yeah.
Right. But my experience is that they hold us to stronger standards.
Don't say. And I don't like that sovereign word.
Yeah. Well, that's why I don't use it.
I just say
I'm one of the people.
You have to go roundabout like you did. That was beautiful.
All right. I have to hold you to the same rules I do everybody else that practices law in my courtroom. Now, see, it's not his courtroom. It's the people's courtroom, and he is a magistrate. Okay. Those are the rules of the court, he says. And Jones says, which rules? The judge says, in other words, I have to hold you to the same standard as anybody else that comes into my courtroom, including the attorneys who have knowledge of all of the rules of court. And which rules of court are we talking about? California rules of court, period. It's called California rules of court. Well, then, with all due respect, sir, then I must object for the record. Okay. Jones says, this is a court of record, and we have chosen those rules that govern the procedures of this court. judge says, that's right, I have California rules of court. I don't know what you're talking about now. Well, do you have my action? Yes. In front of you? Uh-huh. Well, the second paragraph. Judge says, well, I'm trying to explain to you, sir, that you will comply with the California rules of court and you will be held to the same standards as any attorney who practices in this court because those are the rules of court. See, the judge, this is the first time with the judge, so he's, you can see he's quite authoritative.
Yeah.
And so one of the rules of court is we do not allow electronic devices. And Jones says, well, that's a little unusual because I had, okay, the judge says, you now, okay, I've tried to explain this to you. First of all, you're going to turn that tape recorder off. Very well, as long as, for the record, my objection is put on the record. And you got it, says the judge. Turn the tape recorder off, please. Thank you. Now, there are ways to go about getting transcripts and other things. If you are not able to afford them, the Legal Aid Society, there may be some services available to you. I cannot give you legal advice on how to proceed on the case. I want to make that clear. I don't give the other side legal advice. I understand. And I cannot give you legal advice. I understand that. Okay, I'm telling you, you have to comport yourselves to the California rules of court. So do we have that understanding? Well, I understand, but as I said before, this, sir, you brought a lawsuit from the Superior Court in the state of California in the County of Calamity. If you do not like the rules of the Superior Court in the state of California, then file your lawsuit in some other jurisdiction that you feel would accommodate you better, okay? Well, as I said, just for the record, I object. Sure, says the judge. And Jones says, well, this is a court of record, and this court has chosen its rules that will govern this proceedings. Judge says, well, I didn't pick them. They're imposed on us, but I follow them, and so are you, and so is the other side. Counsel, state your appearance. So, for Mr. Smith, low shark net for the defendant. The court says, oh, all right, now, we're here today because of they have filed a demurrer on your complaint. And I'm going to resolve that because I don't think simply because he named the cause of action incorrectly that this is grounds to sustain a general demurrer. This is a case where the judge actually rejected the demurrer. Okay? And even though it was in our favor, we rejected the judge's decision in a later order. Because in the body of his action, he states basically what would be an auto accident personal injury lawsuit. So I'm going to overrule the demurrer. Because it says action of trespass for damages on the caption is not sufficient to sustain a general demurrer. He states facts sufficient, in my opinion, to sustain a cause of action. But there is another alleged violation of Rule 201E, and that might be the cause of a motion to strike on demurrer. And that is, I'm going to ask that the plaintiff interlineate his complaint to provide his resident address and phone number because that is required by the California rules of court on your complaint. He had his post office box on there and no phone number, see? So Mr. Jones says, first, again, I must object for the record. This is a court of record. Okay, you've objected. If you do not do that, I'm going to dismiss your lawsuit at some point. Well, let's see. We got another link on this one. Let's see, number 10. The assertion of federal rights when plainly and reasonably made is not to be defeated under the name of local practice. Okay. I have served them with, and they're over talking each other. Okay. And Jones says he served them with his address. And the judge says, well, sir, I'm directing you on the documents under the California Rule of Court 201E and that you are to provide us with a resident address and a phone number. It's very simple to do that so that the court, Jones says, excuse me. The judge says, so that the court can communicate with you if we have problems. Excuse me? That is not simple as it seems. I do not have a residence. Therefore, I have given them a source where they can communicate to with me. And that's the best I can do. I do not have a residence. I could not do anything else. He had a domicile, okay? That was his reason for saying he didn't have a residence. A resident is some place where you temporarily live and work. Or just work. So anyway, he says, I live in this area, but I do not have a residence. That's that. That's what he says. So the judge says, well, okay, well, Jones says, I've done the best I can. He says, do you have a phone number? I do not. He says, fine. you miss any proceedings, we'll note that on the record. If we have a problem noticing you, your case will get thrown out at some point. We're going to use the P.O. box, and that's your problem. And he says,
why the push to not to give the phone number? Just a personal preference?
We want everything in writing.
Okay, just that fact.
Yeah, that was our philosophy at the time. I've softened on that issue. You know, they don't make phone calls anyway.
I don't.
You know, even though
there
might be some emergency thing. Maybe you had a hearing and for some reason they just had to cancel it, and they just, who knows? But I've never gotten a phone call from them ever, and I don't know anybody who has.
I have.
You have? Okay.
Yeah. I have.
Now I know somebody.
Okay. I received a phone call from the opposing attorney, who, of course, never showed up in court. And now that I was moving to the next stage, he suddenly decided to talk to me after responding to my paperwork with a short letter, something like, I'm a crazy nut that doesn't know what I'm doing. And
sure.
I'm not. Yeah. So that was his communication before that. And then he called me and discussed one of my issues over the phone, and I really didn't care one way or another, so I talked to him. But, I did get a phone call.
Yeah, but you got it from the attorney, not from the court.
Yeah.
Well, in some way, they're like the same.
Well, yeah, in some ways, yeah, I guess. But, no, basically, you know, he didn't want to put it on the record, that's all. I mean,
can't you always, if you've got them on the phone, say that if this is anything other than a change of date, time, or whatever, please put it in writing and just...
Well, you suppose you could, but, you know, the bottom line is that they don't have the phone number. They're not going to violate
that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, I've loosened up on that. I used to be super sensitive to that sort of thing, and now I'm so accustomed to being in charge that I don't worry if they call me or not.
But for some of us that aren't quite as... masterful as you are, it might be better if we could just avoid that issue.
I think you'll get there. And you'll be masterful. It gets to be fun. When you start feeling comfortable with it, you start seeing how it can work. Yeah, there are tight moments. I mean, you have battles, and you have to really think in order to plot and scheme your way to get the wording. And remember Mark Twain's rules for good writing. You know, you remember those?
No.
It's 7 consecutive revisions. It's revise, 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 revise. That's 7 of them, okay? That's his rule for good writing, and it works. That's how this came about. I wrote and rewrote and rearranged and everything. I mean, it got polished.
And it's better to have somebody else take a look at it, too.
Oh, sure.
All right,
sure. Anyway, so they went on. He says, he says, I don't care. He says, I want the court to be served with something. And Jones says, which we did. And the judge says, well, P.O. Box 227, okay, it's not in the file. Well, it should. It was filed on February 9th, notice of change of address. Well, let's see. It's not in my file. It may be in the computer somewhere. And the clerk says, yeah, there was one filed on the 9th. The judge says, okay, will it make it to the file? All right. He says, I'm telling you, you need to communicate with us, and if you don't have a phone, that's fine. You're telling me you do not have a phone? No, I do not. Well, I have to advise you to make sure that you check your mail and keep up on this lawsuit. I will. Okay, all right. I'm going to give the demur is overruled. You have 20 days to answer, please, and the next hearing, unless they notice you of further motions, is May the 7th, night and so forth. That's a Friday at 8:30.
Was it the truth that you did not have a phone?
It doesn't matter.
He didn't have a phone himself, but he certainly was in close communication by phone if somebody...
Yeah, but it didn't really matter. You can see that this judge was trying to establish control.
Sure.
Right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And at the back end, it was...
You can lie then.
No, not lie.
What if
he was not subscribing to a phone service. He did not have his own phone.
Okay.
You have a POID. You don't have a phone. If all you...
Where's our internet?
Yeah. Well, we have. We don't have a phone. We have what's over internet. I have a cell phone. That's not really a phone. That's a... air thing, and it's disrupted all the time, so I don't have to put that out.
Well, in his case, he had no telephone that was billed to him. There were other people who had their phones, and they would be willing to carry it, but you can't be using other people's phones, you know, for non-emergency and mere court process.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so at this point, the sovereign plaintiff started getting a little confused. I mean, this was all new to him, and I did a lot of coaching. I would coach him the night before, and then I would coach him the morning, and to help set his mind. And if you have the right mindset, you will automatically pick the right words. And he was starting to lose it at this point. You'll see. Okay, but no real damage done. Anyway, he says that the judge says that sets the date, and Jones says again, and then the judge says, "Well, that's stamped right on your complaint, sir." By the way. And then Jones says, again, with the way these proceedings are going, I must enter an objection for the record. He was just objecting, okay? He didn't have any...
He got lost.
Yeah, he got lost in the word, okay?
Create a pause, yeah.
And the judge says, well, what don't you like about the way the proceedings are going? Tell me what your objection is. And he says, well, quite frankly, this is a court of record. So what?
I want to ask you something, uh-huh. though. Can you... Couldn't... That whoever that was the sovereign, mm-hmm. Couldn't he have said, "I need a moment, Your Honor"?
Well, he could have, but when you're on the line, the firing line like that, you know, you bumble things. I've screwed up. Other people screwed up. You might. The trick is to win more often than you lose, but you are going to lose. Lose. Okay. Well, we're picking up where we left off, I presume.